WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 25th of September, 2019. As I indicated last week, I completed The Confidential Matter by yours truly, Johnny Dollar. I did the remaining three episodes of that and had a in memorandum for the deceased Daniel Johnston, who is now buried. So, as I promised, I didn't really promise, but I just said I would. I'm going to play a Western double feature this morning. I'm going to start off with good old John Daner, who seemed to be everywhere in these Western dramas of the mid to late 50s. This was a frontier gentleman, although I think he could have worked on his British accent a little bit better, seeing as J.P. Kendall is from London, or at least England. It doesn't indicate where he's from, though he works for the London newspaper. So this one is episode, I believe it's episode 18. Episode 18, I guess, because they don't count the audition programs or what they would refer to as pilots on television. They don't count those as actual episodes. Some sources don't. Either way, this is episode 18 or 19. Frontier Gentleman, titled School Days, had an original air date of the 1st of June, 1958. My name's Arthur. Thanks for listening to The Grand Hour.
One of the prettiest women I've met in the West was very nearly the cause of violence and carnage. And to this day, I don't think she knows why. Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman. One of the first things I noticed in Laramie, Wyoming Territory, was the intense rivalry between that town and Cheyenne on the other side of the Laramie Mountains. One read the bitter attacks and counterattacks in the opposition newspapers. One heard it on the streets. At the time I arrived in Laramie, gold had been discovered in the mountains to the south, and there was great rejoicing in this fact, which threatened to eclipse Cheyenne's claim of superiority. In the interest of fair reporting, I decided to visit the mining area, with the idea of making comparisons between it and that which I had seen in Montana Territory. It was about midday when I saw the sign by the side of the trail reading Rotten Head Gulch, and a few minutes after that when I arrived at a cluster of shacks which constituted said township. I noticed three men outside an edifice which bore the legend Dirty Charlie's Saloon.
Look at there.
Good afternoon.
Howdy. Saloon's closed.
Oh?
Yeah, voting day.
Ah, oh, I see.
You voted yet?
Well, no.
Buck, get out the voting paper.
Got it right here, Jim. Right here, mister.
I'm not a member of your community. Does that make a difference?
Well, you're a human man. That's all the difference we need. Hey, Shorty, get off from the table. Let the stranger sit comfortable like. All right, set, mister. Make your mark, or you can write it out proper if you know how.
One small point. What am I voting for? Or whom?
You're voting for the school mom, that's what and who.
Oh. And do I vote yes or no?
Well, you vote yes, mister. You vote no, you're liable to end up lying toes down. You ain't been sent by them no good Goose Creek boys, have you?
No, I've come from Laramie. Left there this morning.
That's all right, then.
Look here, it's not that I mind voting, but I'd like to know something about it.
Well, he told you, mister.
Shut your mouth, Shorty. Man's got a right to know. That's legal. Well, sir, now it's this way. We got a school mom, Rotten Head Gulch. A school district in Laramie give her, and we aim to keep her.
She's the prettiest thing you ever did see.
Shorty, I'm telling you now, hobble your lip.
Well, she is, ain't she, Buck? Oh, man, she is a cow bunny, and that's for sure.
Now, like I say, we aim to keep her, and ain't no Goose Creek coyote's going to get her. That's how come the vote. Now, the school district says if Goose Creek gets more votes than Rotten Head Gulch, she's going to be sent there.
Now I see.
So you vote yes.
But, is it legal?
Well, sure it's legal.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Look here, I'm in charge of voting. I say it's legal. Anybody comes this here town on voting day is a citizen of Rotten Head Gulch. Honorable like. Now, as mayor, I make you a citizen. Now you vote.
All right.
Hey, Buck, where at's the writing quill?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
We ain't had no voting since this morning. Guess maybe I left it in the saloon.
Well, go get it.
Sure, Jim.
You know, I'm rather surprised to find a school teacher out here. I mean, in a mining town as small as this, are there many children?
Oh, shucks, mister. There ain't no kids around
here. Shorty, one of these here days, that leaky mouth of yourn is going to get you a case of slow.
Well, it's the truth, Jim.
A school teacher with no children to teach? Rather odd, isn't it?
Well, now, sir, ain't nothing odd about it. We aim to get us some kids as soon as we get us some women to marry up with and have the kids.
But how did the school district assign her here in the first place?
Ain't nobody asked to find out. They did, and she's here, and she's going to stay.
She's been learning us. There's 20 of us. Goes to school every night after work's done. Ain't that so, Jim?
Yeah, there's a fact, mister. Now, maybe we ain't kids, but ain't but 5 of us can read and write so as you can notice it. And we figure we got a right to learn as well as any kid.
Oh, I quite agree. But tell me, where does one meet this school teacher of yours?
Well, I seen her a while back down to the creek washing some woman thing.
I found it, Jim.
Right here. Here's a writing quill.
Where at's the ink?
Oh.
You know something? I want to tell you that there Buck. Well, schooling ain't going to do him no good. You know, he ain't got enough brains to start with.
How many votes will you need to keep her here?
Well, more than Goose Creek, that's for sure.
You see, we got 20 votes in Rotten Head Gulch. Goose Creek's got maybe 30. So we just got to vote more than they do, so when the votes is counted, then we'll win.
Who counts the votes?
Oh, back in Laramie. Well, as soon as the day is finished, we seal up the voting boxes and we take them up to Laramie.
But won't they know that you've enlarged your voting? They must be aware of the population here.
Shucks, no such thing. We just got to be sure we got more signed votes in Goose Creek. That's all.
Well, how will you know that?
Well, right now it is kind of a problem.
I got the ink, Jim. Right here.
The ink. There you go, mister.
Good afternoon, boy.
Well, now, good afternoon, Miss Jones. Howdy there.
I've met this gentleman.
Well, no, ma'am. He's just rode in. As soon as he's finished his business, he's going to be riding right out again.
Miss Jones, isn't it?
Yes.
My name is Kendall, Miss Jones. J.B. Kendall.
How do you do, Mr. Kendall?
I have been hearing quite a bit about you, Miss Jones.
Oh, have you?
I'd like very much to talk to you as soon as I've voted.
Voted? But you can't vote. James Ponder.
Oh, now, ma'am, this here is men's work.
I will
and
not
you...
have a dishonest ballot. I told you that before.
Oh, it ain't really dishonest, Miss Jones. Jim made this fella an honorable citizen of Rotten Head Gulch, didn't you?
I'm very sorry, Mr. Kendall, but you cannot vote.
Well, ma'am, you just don't understand these here political things.
I understand that you're trying to stuff the ballot box, and I will not have it. Has everybody in town voted?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
We sure have.
Then in my presence, I want you to seal the box.
Oh, Miss Jones, look, we can't do that. Look here, now, it ain't legal. Yeah, not till sundown. It just ain't legal. That's what it says right here in these here instructions from the school district in Laramie. Now, it just ain't legal. Not till sundown.
If everybody's voted, it's legal. Seal the box.
Yes, ma'am.
That just don't seem right. Some of the other fellas didn't get to vote.
Shorty, can you help me seal up this here now thing? Now, Miss Jones, why don't you take Mr. Kendall and show him the schoolhouse? I figure he'd like to see that.
As a matter of fact, I would.
All right. And no more voting. Is that understood?
Oh, Miss Jones, I understand for sure.
This way, Mr. Kendall. Are you a miner, too?
No. I'm a newspaper correspondent for the London Times.
Isn't that strange? I had a feeling, not exactly, but you're very much like my brother. He's a reporter on a Nebraska paper. How strange. Gave me quite a start when I first saw you.
Miss Jones, how long have you been here?
Rotten Head Gulch, 3 months.
Weren't you surprised to find no children?
Yes. Of course, they kept it from me for almost 2 weeks.
I think I can understand why.
Can you really, Mr. Kendall? Oh, I see. You mean because they wanted to learn themselves. Yes, you're right.
And that's why you decided to stay?
Yes. I suppose you think it curious that a woman devote her time to teaching 20 grown men.
Not curious. Unusual, perhaps.
This is the schoolhouse, Mr. Kendall. The men built it. They built the desks, benches, everything. Would you like to come inside?
Very much.
They even built a wooden floor, Mr. Kendall. Wooden floors are quite rare in these mining towns.
I'm impressed more than I can say, Miss Jones.
They have a great desire for education. I couldn't leave them. Not after they worked so hard to build this.
And now?
Unfortunately, word reached the people of Goose Creek that there was a school teacher here. They are a slightly larger community and feel that the school district board should assign me to their town. Besides which, there are 2 children in Goose Creek.
I see.
The board decided to have it settled by a vote. If enough residents of Goose Creek require my services and outvote the men of Rotten Head Gulch, I shall have to obey the decision of the board.
Well, aren't there other teachers available?
Yes. But that's the strange part of it. Neither town will accept anyone but me. Of course, I'm flattered. But I can't see that it really makes any difference, can you?
Well, yes. In a way, you see...
Here she is, boys. You, mister, elevate your hands high. Now, we don't aim to hurt you none, Miss Joan. You just come along with us and everything will be right fine.
Mr. Kendall?
Now, look here.
Take care of him, Wes.
Well, I'll do that, Pa.
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. Another fascinating adventure is waiting for you on CBS Radio today, as most of these same stations present the FBI in Peace and War. Today, these law enforcers go after a pair of swindlers. You'll be amazed by the cleverness of the swindlers. You'll be thrilled to learn, however, that the FBI in Peace and War is cleverer still. And now, we return you to the Anthony Ellis production of Frontier Gentlemen.
I seem to remember a great roaring in my ears, which, as I awoke, turned out to be the voice of James Ponder. He was kneeling over me, and seeing my eyes open, redoubled his efforts to pour a great dollop of foul-tasting whiskey down my throat.
Come on, Kendall, it'll clear your head.
No, don't.
There you go.
I don't need it. No.
What happened?
Yeah, what?
Hey, where is she, Kendall?
Help me up, will you?
Well, where is she? We heard horses, and when we got here, there wasn't nobody except you.
Yeah.
There were 3 or 4 men, masked. They'd taken her.
Well, who was he?
I don't know, except there was a father and son. The older man called the other Wes.
Wes? Jim, that's Wes over to Goose Creek.
Yeah, Stomp Peter's son, Wes. I might have noted.
You reckon they carried her off to beat the vote?
That's what they done.
What good would it do?
Well, I'll tell you what good. They figured they got more votes than we got, and even if we maybe voted more times than them, they got her in Goose Creek. And by the time the school district gets around eyeballing around and maybe a recount, well, it'll be 2, maybe 3 months. By then, there's going to be a new school district board in, and the whole blame thing will have to start up again.
Oh, that no-account stomp Peters, he's about as welcome as a rattler in a dog town.
Ah, dally your tongue, Shorty. Now, go fetch them other boys out of the hills. We got to do something about this.
Oh, we sure have, Jim.
I tell you, ain't no Goose Creek sidewinder going to rustle our school tomorrow. All right, hit the breeze, Shorty. And you too, Buck. Tell the boys to wear shooting irons. This here's going to be a powder-burning contest.
An hour later, 20 men, hard-bitten miners, some of them young, others grizzled, all armed to the teeth, were gathered in Dirty Charlie's saloon. Their mood was black, and it became blacker as Jim Ponder spoke to them.
That's Tom Peters. He's a no-good, bull-windy, oily brock. He come here looking for our school, Mom, and he snatches her clean out of Rotten Head Gulch. Well, he ain't gonna get away with it. Because we're going over to Goose Creek, and we're going to shoot up that there place like you never seen. And we're going to get Miss Jones right back where she belongs, yeah?
Here, where she belongs.
And when we get through with Stone Peters and that dingbat son of his, we're going to use them to trim a tree, yeah?
Yeah, trim a tree.
All right, now get your horses, boys, and rattle the hawks out of here.
You coming, Miss Kendall?
Oh, certainly.
Likely they'll be shooting.
How far is it to Goose Creek?
Oh, about half a mile.
All right, now, let's go!
Don't you imagine they'll be expecting you?
Why, sure they'll be expecting us. It's going to be a real shoot-up.
Wouldn't it have been better to surprise them?
What for? They know we'd be coming after them.
Supposing she gets hurt.
Well, now, you know, I didn't think of that. Hey, you figure maybe.
With shooting, there's a chance.
Boys, you hear what Kendall here says? Well, we don't want the school mom hurt. So you watch where you're shooting at, you hear? All right, now. We're going to take it real slow. Just around the next turn. Yeah. Hey, Kendall. You and me, we're going to keep an eye out for Miss Jones. Either one of us eyeballs her gets out of there fast, you hear?
Right.
There they are.
Hey, looky at that there, Kendall. Right in the middle of the street. Like you say, looks like they've been expecting us.
We came upon Goose Creek with abrupt suddenness. The trail rounded a bend and became an elongated clearing lined on both sides with shacks, perhaps a half dozen more than existed in Rotten Head Gulch. Between the dwellings and in the middle of the street were piled boxes, barrels, and two overturned wagons. Behind this barricade, we could see the figures of men and a reflection of sunlight on steel. Up to this point, even with my headache, the affair had been rather difficult to take seriously. But the complexion had radically changed. When we were no more than 20 yards from the defenders, Jim Ponder held up his hand.
Stop, Peter! What do you want, Ponder? We come to get Miss Jones and take her back to her rightful home.
She's in her rightful home. Guess where she is?
And you're a liar.
Want to start trouble?
We ain't going back without the school, Marm.
Maybe you ain't going back because you'll be shaking hands with St. Peter.
Let me talk to him.
This ain't no time for chewing the cud. Let's start throwing lead.
Shorty, shut your mouth, will you?
They're in a better position than we are.
Why, shucks, we could ride right over them.
If you lived that long.
What's the matter, boys? Afraid to take the big jump?
Come out, Peters. You can bring another man with you. Jim Ponder and I'll meet you between the lines.
Who are you?
The chap who was with Miss Jones.
I told you, Pa. I told you he wasn't dead.
All right. You and Ponder, get off your horses. Come forward slow.
You watch it, Jim.
Now, don't you fret. Hey, boys. They start something. You go in and finish it, yeah?
Well,
be fine. Let's go, Kendall.
What's your name, mister?
Kendall.
This here's my boy, Wes. We figured he killed you.
I told you I didn't, Pa.
What do you got to say?
Where's Miss Jones?
In the schoolhouse we got built for her.
Is she all right?
Sure, she's all right.
Ain't nobody gonna hurt that pretty gal.
No, sir.
Well, we ain't take her back, Stomp Peters.
You're off your mental reservation if you think you can do it, Ponder. You ain't got no right to a school, ma'am, nohow.
Why, there ain't a kid in that broken-down flea-bitten town of yours.
Well, that don't matter. We aim to get some by and by. School district give her to us.
We just outvoted you. She's ours now.
You better set your gun a-going, Stone Peters.
Is that what you want? I'm willing. Draw.
Now, wait. That won't settle anything.
Well, I've never seen a better way.
You get him, Paul. Cut down to Sir Kendall, fella.
Young man, I owe you something for that clout on the head, but I have no desire to kill you. Now, both of you, keep your hands in sight. You too, Jim.
Huh? Hey, what's ailing you, mister? I'm on your side.
Then keep your gun holstered. There's no need for shooting. Peters, tell one of your men to bring Miss Jones out here.
I ain't gonna do it.
Sam, go get the school, ma'am. Bring her out.
Just what you got in mind, Kendall.
You'll see.
Well, it better be good. Of course, effing it ain't. Effing Stomp Peters' boys don't get you, me or mine will. Ain't nobody pulls a gun on me and gets away with it.
I think it's for the best.
What are you men doing?
Well, howdy, ma'am. We come to get you out of this here pest hole. We come to save you.
I've had enough of this nonsense. First, I'm forced to accompany Mr. Peters against my will. Now your men are lined up waiting to kill each other. I will not have it. Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Kendall, put away that gun. All of you, put down those guns.
All right, boys. Heard what she said. Now, put them away.
Now, Mr. Kendall, I should be obliged if you will escort me back to Laramie.
Laramie? You going to go back to Laramie?
Oh, she's going to Laramie.
Oh, Miss Jones.
It's gone too far. If this is the example, you set your children.
Miss Jones, could I have a word with you in private?
I really don't see that
Well, I think you will. Gentlemen, if you'll excuse us.
Oh, she can't go back to Laramie. You said you could have her.
Looks like there ain't nobody going to have her no more.
Forgetful grammar. Double, triple, negative.
Miss Jones, there may be a solution, if you're willing.
I don't see any way. I really don't.
If they could share you?
Share me?
No, I mean your teaching. The towns are only a half mile apart. It might be possible.
No, Mr. Kendall. My mind's made up. Today is the final straw.
Miss Jones, think of the schoolhouse in Rottenhead Gulch.
You know, it was rather touching. They've built a schoolhouse for me here in Goose Creek as well. The floor isn't quite as good, but...
They need you, Miss Jones.
You think so?
I do. Look at them.
They are like children, aren't they?
Very much like children.
I think perhaps you're right, Mr. Kendall. But I wonder what the school district board will think.
Well, I imagine a joint petition from both towns ought to settle the problem.
Yes. Yes, very likely. All right. If the men will agree to your plan...
I'm sure they will.
All right. I'll stay. Mr. Kendall?
Yes?
While I was being held captive, a rather terrible thought occurred to me. It is the education that I can give them, isn't it? I mean, there are no baser thoughts involved. Perhaps because I am a woman?
Miss Jones, were it not for the fact that I have already completed my school and university curricula, I should not hesitate to avail myself of the opportunity to better my education.
Thank you, Mr. Kendall. You've relieved my mind.
The matter was settled most amicably, and readers of the London Times will be interested to know that an extraordinarily pretty woman by the name of Miss Annabella Jones is now entrusted with the education of some 53 adults and 2 children in the mining towns of Goose Creek and Rottenhead Gulch in Wyoming Territory.
That wasn't very uplifting. I don't know what would be this dark 25th of September morning. That was School Days, the original air date of the 1st of June 1958, starring John Danner as Is it JP or JB Kendall? It's been a while since I've played a Frontier Gentleman, so I guess I don't really recollect. I always thought it was JB Kendall, but whatever. We have to fulfill an FCC obligation here for a moment. So please stick around for the second half of the show.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. This is, you're listening to Arthur here, the Grand Hour at 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org here in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. As I expressed, we're going to have a double feature this week, Western double feature. I don't believe I've played a six shooter since the Grand Hour has moved up an hour to the 5 to 6 a.m. time slot. Thank you very much to the executive board because my show is renewed for this semester. It's just going to get colder this semester until next semester when it starts to warm up again. But I haven't played a six shooter here in this new time slot. The six shooter stars James Stewart. It's Britt Ponsett. This is a fan favorite, a Grand Hour fan club favorite. This is one that's titled The Double Seven. This had an original air date of the 13th of May, 1954. So it was a sustained show on NBC, meaning it had no sponsors. It was strictly its own show. So it runs a little bit longer than the average radio drama. Without further ado, here we go. Thanks for listening.
You'll hear James Stewart as The Six Shooter, just one of the many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with The Bob Hope Show, The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford. Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring you both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both The Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Halfway Creek sure wasn't much of a town. Oh, that general store and cafe, room and house, and a blacksmith shop. That's about all there was to it. And I'd never figured out where the place got its name, either. It didn't seem to be halfway to anything. As a matter of fact, it was right at the end of the trail from Santa Fe. Only thing further west is a couple of small farms and Gid Bascom's 77 Ranch. That's where I was heading, the 77, to see if I could sign on with Gid for the spring roundup. Oh. Wow, it didn't look like I was going to have to ride out all the way. Oh, boy. Oh. Yeah. Well, there was Gid himself pounding down the main street, five or six fellows behind him. Well, if he had that many men working for him already, he probably wouldn't have much use for me.
Hey, Britt. Britt Fancy.
Howdy, Gid.
Where in the name of Moses you come from, Britt?
Oh, no place special. I was laying some railroad track out of Denver for a spell, but then I thought it was about time for me to hit the saddle again.
Well, if you're looking for a job, we can always use an extra hand, can't we, boys?
Well, it's mighty nice of you, Gid. To tell you the truth, I was sort of hoping that you had room for another.
Well, go on, Britt.
Oh, I guess you've got enough help here without me.
Well, my outfit's been growing since you were through here last. We're stretched clear over to Apache Hill.
You don't say.
Yeah, it takes a lot of riders to cover that much ground.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Oh, come on then, let's go. We're on our way back to the 77 right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe next roundup, Gid.
What's the matter with you, Britt? You said you were looking for work.
I reckon I'm what changed Ponce's mind, Gid. I reckon he's a little too fancy to ride alongside me.
Huh?
How about it, six-shooter?
You boys know each other?
We met up.
Yeah.
Well, take it easy, Gid. I'll be saying
it. Now, hold up a minute, Britt. You go ahead, boys. I'll catch up with you. I want to talk to Ponce.
You're wasting your breath.
I'm still boss of the 77, Clint. I don't need no advice from you.
Sure, Gid, sure.
I better cup of coffee, Britt.
Oh, thanks. I guess I could use one.
Yes. Christian ain't the best cook in the world. He can usually get his coffee down without it gagging you.
Chris, you still run the cafe, huh?
Sure. Town ain't changed much, Britt. On the surface, that is.
Oh.
Oh, well, come on in, Mr. Bascom. Come on in.
Hello, Christy. You remember Britt Ponsett?
Britt, well, for goodness sakes, when did you get back to town?
Oh, just a little while ago, Christy. Ah, you're sure looking well.
Fit as a fiddle, Mr. Ponsett. Fit as a fiddle. Now, you both sit down at that table over there, and I'll bring you some of my special for today. Beef stew. I made it fresh this morning.
No, thanks, Christy. We just come in for some coffee.
Well, it's after 4:00. It's practically time for supper.
Our coffee will do the trick for now.
Well, what about you, Mr. Ponsett? A little taste of my stew?
No. I think I'll just stick to coffee, too.
Oh, okay. Well, the pot's on the stove out in back. I'll get it.
No hurry. Well, Britt?
Hmm?
Is Clint right? Is it on account of him you don't want to work for me?
I never said that, Gid.
You sure acted it.
Well, to tell you the truth, I was sort of surprised that you'd hire a man like Clint Sutton.
Britt, I just didn't have no choice.
Oh?
Like I told you, the 77's been growing. When a ranch gets big, well, I guess a man's bound to make enemies. He needs somebody who's handy with a gun around.
Mm-hmm. You never had any enemies before, Gid.
Yeah, well, times are different now, Britt.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you remember those sod busters down by the creek, Perry Waddell and Fred Garver?
Sure.
Well, there's been some new ones move in the last year or so.
Well, that isn't your land along the creek, is it?
No. Yeah. Never claimed it was. I always figured there was plenty of space around here. Room enough for me and them nesters, too.
Well?
Well, I ain't been like some of the other ranches. You know that, Britt. I ain't never tried to run the sod busters off or burn them out. Live and let live. That's what I always said. I try to practice my preaching, too.
Here's your coffee, Gid. Right off the stove. Here we are. You sure you won't have nothing else?
Oh, thanks, Christy. Here you go.
No, hold
Keep
on.
Keep your hands away from your pockets, Britt. I guess I can afford a couple of cups of coffee.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Bascom. Say, I've got some bread in the oven, so if you want anything more, you just holler. Boy.
You better saucer it for a spell. Let it cool off some, huh?
Wow. Hey, it's not the heat, it's the taste. Gee whiz, that stuff's Well, it's as bad as the coffee I make myself. Worse.
Yeah, I guess it's a good thing we didn't order none of Christie's stew.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, Britt, about Clint Sutton. Now, there was a good reason for hiring him. They've been stealing my cattle.
What?
Yeah, them nesters.
Now,
there ain't any doubt about it. My tallies are short. After the roundup, I'll know for certain how many they got away with.
Well, now, Gid, it doesn't stand to reason that men like Waddell and Garver would rustle your animals. They're in a rough spot as it is when they're living right next to the edge of your ranch. Well, they must know that you could shove them off of there if you took a mind to it.
I guess they know that, all right. Anyway, one of them tried to shoot me.
Were you sure of that?
No, I didn't see who it was, not for certain. But there ain't been any strangers around Halfway Creek lately, so...
Sutton's a stranger.
I hired him after the shooting. I had to have somebody, Britt. My own boys ain't very fast with a gun. They ain't had much experience lately.
Now, Gid, you're just asking for trouble bringing Clint Sutton in here.
Britt, the trouble's already started, and I didn't start it. They did. Of course, if I had known you were coming into town, I wouldn't have taken Clint on.
Well, if what you wanted was a gun, I'm not the man for you. I reckon Clint is.
Well, that's the way you feel, Britt.
That's the way I feel.
Maybe you'll change your mind after things quiet down. Or maybe there won't be a serious mix-up now that them sod busters know that I mean business.
I wouldn't count on that yet. Well, thanks for the coffee. Well, it was getting on toward evening now, and I was beginning to feel some hunger pains down the pit of my stomach. I sure didn't like the idea of sampling Christiot's stew, though. I figured I'd be better off to buy some cold grub at the general store, so I headed across the street. Just as I started to go in the front door, I saw somebody staring at me from behind a wagon over to the blacksmith shop. Sun was directly behind him, so I couldn't tell who it was exactly. Not until it came around into the shade.
Britt? That you, Britt?
Huh? Yeah.
Well, don't you recognize me? Perry Waddell?
Oh. Oh, sure, Perry. Oh, the sun was in my eyes. I couldn't see it.
You busy, Britt?
No, not especially.
Well, I'd like to talk to you if you got a minute spare. Busted one of my wagon wheels this morning. I'm waiting for Sam Todd to see if he can put it together.
Mm-hmm. Well, how have things been going with you, Perry?
Not so good, Britt. Not so good.
Yeah, I was just talking to Gid Bascom. What's behind the trouble, anyway?
Same old story, I reckon. Big ranch, small farms, there just ain't room for them both.
There's always plenty of room before. Perry, Gid tells me that some of his cattle are missing.
Oh, that's just his excuse to get rid of us.
Uh-huh.
And I ain't no thief, Britt.
Oh, of course not, Perry. But I understand that they've been some new families moving in, is that right?
Any farmer who steals from Gid's herd, he'd be plumb loco. He'd just be asking for Gid to burn him out.
Yeah, that's true enough.
I suppose Gid told you somebody took a shot at him, too, and said it was one of us.
He mentioned something about it, yeah.
He just needed a reason for bringing that Clint Sutton in here. Clint's a killer, pure and simple. Ain't bad enough that Gid wants our land. He's got to hire a gunfighter to take it away from us.
Well, Gid never objected to your farms before, Perry.
There was always plenty of other land waiting for him. Now he's pushed his ranch clear to Apache Hill. He can't go no farther in that direction, so he's got to spread east. And we're in his way.
It just somehow doesn't sound like Gid. He sure seems sincere when I talk to him. Now, I'm almost certain he believes somebody's been rustling his cattle.
Britt, I swear to you that I never so much as laid a hand on any of his stuff.
Well, that's none of my concern, Perry. I'm leaving town anyway.
Well, you can't leave, Britt. You've got to stay here.
I what?
You're the only man who can stand up to Bascom. And Sutton.
Oh, and I'll hold on, Perry.
Oh, we couldn't pay you much, but we'd all chip in and give you what we can.
I told Gid I'm not a hired gun. I'm going to tell you the same thing.
Britt, my farm's all I've got in this world. I spent 21 years trying to build it up into something that'd mean a decent living for my wife and kids. Nobody's going to take it away from me now.
Well, I understand that. I understand. Hey, look at that. Looks like somebody's in a rush, huh?
Yeah. It's Ruth Lovett.
Who?
Oh, he's homesteading the place right next to mine. Ruth? Ruth, what's your hurry?
Yeah, I gotta see you, Perry.
Sure?
Yeah, but it's real important.
Well, I was just going into the store anyway, so I'll see you later.
No need for you to rush off, Britt. Ruth, this here's Britt Ponsett. You can speak your mind in front of him.
Six-shooter?
That's right.
Real pleased to meet you, Mr. Ponsett.
Howdy.
Now, what's all the fuss about, Ruth?
They're gonna burn us out tonight, Perry.
You what? Sure?
Yeah, one of Gid's own men told me.
Well, I was just talking to Gid just a little while ago, Ruth. He never had any intention then.
Well, maybe he's changed his mind since then, Mr. Ponsett, or maybe he didn't feel like advertising what he's up to. Now, Perry, we got to get together, all us farmers.
Oh, sure, Ruth, sure. We'll hold him off.
Hold him off? Why, we wouldn't have a chance against a man like Clint Sutton.
Well, we got to do something. We got to fight back.
Yeah, we'll fight back, all right, but on our own ground.
What do you mean?
Well, they'll be riding toward our farms tonight, Gid and all his boys. There won't be a soul over at the 77.
Yeah?
We'll show Gid Bascom he ain't gonna have everything his way. We'll burn him out while he's burning us.
Oh, Ruth, I...
Now, I sure don't see what you'll accomplish by that, Ruth.
Why, Gid'll think twice before he tries to shove somebody else around. That's what we'll accomplish.
Maybe so, but it won't save your farm.
Well, what else can we do?
Well, you might try talking to Gid, see if you can find out what's eating.
Talk's a waste of time.
Oh, I don't know, Ruth. Maybe he'll listen to reason.
Has he ever listened to us before?
Well...
Besides, what about Clint Sutton? Who's gonna reason with that gun of his?
Yeah, I kind of forgot about Clint. Britt?
Now, Perry...
Britt, talking to Gid is your idea.
Yeah, I know it is. I know, but I... Oh, doggone it, Perry... All right, I'll see if I can head him off. Now, you and Ruth go back to your farm. Stay put, huh?
Okay, Mr. Ponsett.
You don't know how much this means to us, Britt.
Yeah, I see. Got it. Maybe someday I'll learn to keep my doggone ideas to myself.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment. If you're of teenage or up, a loyal American, male or female, your country needs you in the Civilian Ground Observer Corps. You've heard the radio broadcasts, seen the television pictures. You know the facts. You know what a single H-bomb dropped in any metropolitan area could do. And today's long-range bombers have made intercontinental war possible. Enemy planes based on the other side of the world could reach the United States in a matter of hours. Radar can help detect them, but there are dangerous gaps through which low-flying planes can penetrate without detection. To fill out our detection system, civilian personnel is needed, particularly along the east and west coasts and in the northern states. Sky watching is not a game, it's a necessary precaution. The Ground Observer Corps is now operating on a 24-hour-a-day basis and needs at least 200,000 volunteers to contribute a few hours of their spare time to this vital work. Will you volunteer? Get in touch with your local civilian defense center at once. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter. Starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Gid Bascom's ranch house is about a 3-hour ride from town, so around about 8 o'clock, I figure I was halfway there. The moon was just beginning to silver up the top of Apache Hill. I hadn't been too sure of the trail, but... Now that things were lightening up some, I gave Scarlet a nudge. Come on, let's go. It was real sandy country. A clump of purple sage every now and then, once in a while a pine tree or two. And we must have covered about 4 miles, and then we came to a little creek. From there on, the trail started to wind into a kind of a jagged ravine with a couple of tall yellow rocks at the mouth. Sort of sticking up straight in the air like a couple of fingers. We were just getting past those rocks when I heard what sounded like about a half a dozen horses coming toward me. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, Scar. I pulled up and waited. Oh,
Howdy, Gad.
What are you doing out here, Britt?
Oh, I just thought I might come out and take a look at the 77.
Some other time.
You, in a hurry to go somewhere?
That's right, we're in a hurry.
Oh, hello, Clint.
Come on, Gid, we ain't got all night.
Right.
You mind telling me where you're heading, Gid?
Look, I offered you a job this afternoon, you turned me down. I don't see where anything I do from here on in is your concern.
No, it sure isn't. But I was just noticing, and it looks to me like you've got the whole crew with you.
What if I have?
Well, that must be something kind of important to take you all the way out here, away from the ranch this time of night.
We're going to burn out a bunch of Stephen rustlers. Is that important enough for you, Ponsett?
Clint!
Well, he might as well know it. He can't do nothing to stop us.
What happened, Ged? You weren't planning anything like this when I talked to you a little while ago.
Clint found five of my steers over in a canyon behind one of them farms.
Well, maybe your steers got lost. Maybe they just strayed over that way.
And hobbled themselves?
Well, even so, it seems to me like this is a matter for the law.
There ain't no sheriff in Halfway Creek. You know that, Britt.
Well, there's a sheriff at Bixby Falls. Somebody can go over and get him.
You get him if you want him, Ponsett. We got other things to do.
No.
Come on, Gid.
No. I wouldn't let Clint hurry me if I was you, Gid.
What difference does it make?
It might make a lot of difference. Seeing as how those farmers were talking about paying you back if you go after them.
I'd sure like to know what they could do.
Well, they sort of had an idea that they could burn down the 77.
What? Well, they sure must want to get themselves killed.
Uh-huh. It doesn't look to me like there'd be anybody there to kill them, Sutton.
Look, he's lying. He's just trying to stall it.
Do you think I'm lying, Gid?
Turn around, boys. We're going back to the ranch.
Are you crazy? Get them nesters with me.
Hey, Seth, turn around. Now, let's go.
Well, I watched them for a minute or two, moving along through the ravine, heading back to the 77. I could hear Clint arguing with Gid, and Gid didn't seem to be paying much attention to him. Then I swung Scar around toward Halfway Creek. Must have been about 30 minutes later when we came down to a narrow stretch of trail that twisted down the side of the cliff. Easy, boy. Easy. The moon was sliding under a thick milk-white cloud, and the rocks and the trees started fading into night shadows. For a minute or so, everything got real still. Even the crickets. Somebody else was taking the same trail. Sounded like he was following me. I got a kind of a crickly feeling across the back of my neck. I started wondering maybe Clint Sutton. I twisted around to see if I could get a look. I had to squint my eyes, but finally I made out the shape of a horse about 40 feet back. He was just standing there, nibbling on a couple of tufts of grass. Wasn't anybody in the saddle. And right then, the cloud over the moon started skidding away, and the trees began coming back to size. I was just about to give Scar a touch of the spur when I saw him, crouching low behind a clump of pines. I saw something else, too, a little glint of metal. Whoever it was had a gun. I jerked out of the saddle and hit the ground. Looked around for cover. His aim was close. It was too darn close. Well, it couldn't be Sutton. I knew Clint's style of gunplay. He might miss one shot, and he wouldn't miss twice. And then I spotted a little gully a few feet to my left, and I crawled toward it, keeping as low as I could. I was almost there before he had a chance to fire again. When he did, I started rolling, and I tumbled down into the draw. I took out my gun. I was hoping he'd think he'd hit me, but his bullet had sent me over the side. I couldn't hear him move. I pressed flat, and I pulled up behind a couple of big tumbleweeds. I sort of cut down my chance of him spotting me. He was coming now. He was going to be at the edge of the gully in a couple more steps. I shoved my gun up and sort of gauged where I thought he'd show. Then a leg came into sight. Not more than 6 feet away. And then his body swung up into view. And just before he fired, he went down on his knees fast. I swung out of the way, and his bullet cut through one of the tumbleweeds.
I gave it a shove and the wind sort of caught it. He fired again. But he wasn't firing at me now. He's firing at the weed. And he had to rise up into sight to get aim. And my bullet slapped him on the shoulder, and for a minute he sort of hung in midair and teetering on the edge of the draw. And then he pitched forward and toppled down beside me. And I turned him over and got a look at his face. What the thunder are you trying to do, Rufe? You should have been able to recognize me. It wasn't as dark as all that.
I recognized you, Ponset.
What?
You shouldn't have meddled in this. Gid would have burned us out if it hadn't been for you stopping him.
Well, you wanted him to burn you out?
It's going to happen anyway, ain't it? Sooner or later.
Well, not if Gid isn't forced into it.
Big ranchers don't need no forcing.
What are you talking about? I don't understand you, Rufe. It was your farm he was going to burn. You're talking like that you hoped it would happen.
You think I care about that farm? I had me a farm once down in Texas. Real good soil, brown, soft, rich, plenty of water, too. Man could grow anything on that land.
Well, what happened to it?
Well, there was a ranch, bigger than Gid's outfit even. But it wasn't big enough. Not big enough to suit the fellow on that. He kept stretching out, crawling down from the hills, moving his fences closer and closer till one day they was right up against my property. He offered to buy me out. He offered me good money, but it was my farm. I didn't want to sell no matter what he was willing to pay me.
Here, come on. I'll pull out your shirt, too. Try and see if I can get that bleeding to stop.
Yeah.
You think you'll be able to ride?
I don't know. Give me a couple of minutes.
Oh, sure. Well, go on. You were telling me about your farm down in Texas.
Ain't much more to tell. I wouldn't sell it. Nancy, she was my wife. She told me I was wrong. I'd have to give in, but I didn't listen to her. I should have listened and burned us out.
I see.
I wasn't there when it happened. I was in town. Nancy, she tried to stop him. He killed her.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lovett.
He killed her and left her there in the house while they burned it. Couldn't even give her a decent burial. There was...
No, take it easy, Rufe.
Don't matter what becomes of me, Ponset, not anymore. After Nancy... Well, afterwards, I come up here to New Mexico. Figured maybe I could start over, maybe things would be different, but there wasn't no different. There's always a ranch and a fella like Gid Bascom to shove you around. I watched him. Watched him spreading out clear to Apache Hills, and then when he couldn't go no further in that direction, I knowed he'd be coming my way. Well, I wasn't just going to sit around and wait for him like I'd done before.
So you stole Gid's cattle. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't have nothing to lose. I was going to be burned out anyways. I even took a shot at him, but I ain't much good with a gun. I guess it kind of showed that tonight.
Well, it wasn't Gid who burned you out down in Texas, Rufe.
Luke was a rancher just like Gid. They're all the same, Ponset, with their grabbing, burning, and killing. I figured if I stirred up enough trouble to force Gid out in the open, maybe then some of the other farmers would come along with me and we'd burn him up. He'd get a taste of his own medicine. I'd be paying Gid back for what he'd done to Nancy.
But, Rufe, I'm
I can still see how it was that night. Smoke and ashes everywhere. First, I couldn't believe it that they killed her. I started to holler and holler until my throat was so sore the sound just wouldn't come out no more. But she didn't answer me. You know, I thought maybe she'd run off somewhere. They'd scared her and she'd run away. And I saw her. Over behind a pile of smoking timbers. Her clothes was all burned up. That's what he'd done. That's what Gid had done.
That wasn't Gid Bascom. Now, get a hold of yourself.
I've got to make it up for Nancy. I got to burn the 77.
And you're coming to town with me.
Town?
Come on now. Can you stand up?
I guess so. Who are you?
You come along. Now, here, let me give you a hand.
Well, what about Luke Harper?
Luke Harper?
You ain't been listening to me.
I told you, I got to get even with Harper for killing my wife. That's what I was going to do tonight, burn down his ranch. Now, I told you.
I know, yes. Now, you told me. But you just better forget about that for now.
Well, I couldn't forget. Not ever.
Come on, Ruth. Come on, you and me are going to town.
Huh?
Here, I'll help you on your horse here. Come on.
Thanks, mister. Thanks a lot. You've been real kind to... Funny. There's something wrong with my shoulder. Somebody shot me. Did Luke Harper do that, mister?
Maybe he did, Ruth. In a way, maybe he did.
Roof as far as Perry Waddell's house before I went in to get the doc. It looked like Roof was going to be all right. At least it looked like he'd get over that wound in the shoulder. But whether he'd really ever get well again, I guess even the doctor couldn't tell that. The next morning, Gid Bascom rode into town, found out what had happened. He said he was willing to forget about the stolen cattle and the other trouble Roof had caused him. And he said he'd get rid of Clint Sutton, too. He didn't come right out and admit it, but I've got a hunch he was kind of sorry that he'd hired Sutton in the first place. It just goes to show you there's differences in ranchers like anything else.
Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is written by Frank Burtz and is based on a character created by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Lamont Johnson, Gerald Moore, Bob Griffin, Parley Bear, and Howard McNear. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlin, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters...
Wasn't as exciting as School Days by Frontier Gentlemen, but there you have it. James Stewart is the Six Shooter in the 77. The original air date of that episode was the 13th of May, 1954. I'm going to go ahead and close out the show here with what I believe to be a Ken Curtis song. Ken Curtis was featured as Festus on Gunsmoke, just to keep the Western themes going. And I have not, the only time I've ever heard this was from Hank Williams on when he did his program, The Louisiana Hayride. So, thanks for listening. This is Arthur here in the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I actually believe Ken Curtis is singing with the Sons of the Pioneers on this, on Happy Roving Cowboy. Thanks for listening.
Got a wife to bother my life. I'm just a happy roving cowboy. Let me make my bed where the farmer's prowl beneath the sky of blue.
Hear my song as I ride along. I'm just a happy roving cowboy. Herding the dark clouds out of the sky, keeping the heavens blue.
I ain't got a dime just to spendin' my time. I'm just a happy roving cowboy. Let me sing my song till they call me home to the land beyond.